Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm your host, Tom. And today I'm rolling solo without John because, as we've said, he doesn't even know what a schedule is these days. And he got called into work at the very last minute. So, John, keep your head down. It's right after Thanksgiving. So, you know, it's probably not worth it. Unless it's going to be a real good fight, stay out of it. For the rest of you guys, we have Jacob back. We're continuing our series on his experiences with the Marine Corps in Afghanistan. And we just, well, there he's putting on his headphones. What's up, Jacob? How are you?
Oh, not much. Just rolling through the punches at this point. Got more of the guys on tonight with me, so I'm going to be mostly quiet, and they're going to be able to tell their whole part of all the shenanigans and times that we had over there.
Right. So we have Irvin, we have Natty, and we have Cokie. So let's just go one by one. Let's start with Irvin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Especially, you know, Jacob talked you guys up so much that I thought I had to. I was really looking forward to meeting the guys that were hopefully going to live up to this reputation that he says. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how long you were in and how you got in the Marine Corps and what you did while you were in.
So a little bit about myself. I grew up out in a little West Texas town. And so I grew up shooting and knew all about that stuff. But Marine Corps is kind of my last defense really to get out of because I grew up in the foster system, so get out of poverty and kind of get out of the way I was growing up and whatnot. And so the Marine Corps was my way out. And you know, when I got there, I knew what I wanted to do, and you know, I knew that I wanted to be a sniper and stuff like that. So you know, I joined, and first opportunity I had to do that in doc, I did it and got in, and you know, went to sniper school, did all that stuff, and then met all these guys, and you know, it was a kind of like a some of the best times of my life, and learned a lot, and you know, got to make some of the most amazing friends with especially our sniper team. I mean, the cohesion between us was like none other, so it was great. So that's kind of a little bit about me.
So then quick question, growing up in the foster system, did you notice, or was this the first time when you got into the Marine Corps? Did you have any experiences like as far as family goes or developing camaraderie that were firsts in your life, like the military giving you experience of a level playing field, or was it an adjustment, or did you have a pretty good gig in the system? It doesn't sound like it from the way you talked about it.
No, honestly, I grew up a pretty bad childhood, and so these guys were the first guys that I actually like bonded with and made that really tight cohesion with. And you know, I always had a bunch of trust issues with trusting people just because of what I had gone through. And you know, the only other close guy that I grew up with, it's kind of a crazy story. You know, he was a huge drug dealer, you know, kind of took me under his wing, And then we got in some pretty bad stuff when I was younger, and he ended up getting killed. And we both almost got killed. Well, he got killed, and, you know, I almost got killed as well. And it was from that day, I was like, I got to get out of here. So I met with these guys, and that's how, I mean, couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah, sounds like it. And now, Koki, you were also serving with Irvin, is that correct? I mean, all of you guys served together, obviously, in the same unit, but you, Koki, and Irvin and Natty, you guys were all particularly in the same group, squad. Is that?
We were in the same. Right? So the shadow team, or the shadow platoon, was the Scout Sniper platoon in 3-7.
Okay.
We did not choose that call sign, by the way. That just kind of got put on us, and we thought it was lame at the time. But as it kind of grew on us, now it's part of the culture.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, that's like getting to choose your own nickname and you know, choosing Spectre or something like it's pretty like cool. But
that's what's up, man. But so it was a 16-man platoon, and I think that's going to come into play a little bit later. But we divided up into two individual sections, so. Shadow 1 was at another place doing some other work at the time, and Shadow 2 was in at the front of Musicale invasion.
Okay. And so how did you end up with the Shadow Platoon and in the Marine Corps?
The details of my life are quite inconsequential.
did you join right up after high school, or?
No, I actually was in I graduated college. You know, a typical story. I went to college to be a preaching minister, and then joined the Marine Corps and picked up a sniper rifle instead. And, you know, like most people do, that's the normal pipeline, right?
It's the common story. I think they've made movie of the weeks about it. It's totally normal. Out of curiosity, what seminary were you going to go to?
No, I went to and graduated from Cincinnati Bible College in a seminary.
Wow. Okay.
So I got a 4-year degree in preaching. Yes, that's a thing. And then I went to the Marine Corps and went to snipers as literally as quick as possible.
Right. Right. Okay. And Natty, how did you end up with this motley crew?
So I joined the Marine Corps right after high school. Went to boot camp, you know, a couple days after turning 18. And Irv and I actually went to sniper school together. He left that part out.
Yeah.
Almost like he forgot about me, but so him and I joined the platoon about the same time, and he was a mortarman, I was an anti-tank assault man. We joined the platoon on a similar timeline, and went to sniper school together and graduated.
Okay, so I got to ask, which one of you graduated higher in your class?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I mean,
Herb got a high stalker, right?
I was really good at stalking.
Yeah. So for your listeners, the stalking portion is, if you've ever seen Clear and Present Danger.
I was just thinking about that because that's my favorite scene in that movie.
Yeah, so it's that one dude that's like sneaking through the woods and stuff, and he's shooting at targets and whatnot where dudes are looking at him. So picture like 20 of those guys, and Irv was the best one.
Wow. So you are the sneaky bastard.
Yes.
A little bit, something like that.
All right. Was that a line from Beverly Hills Cop? I wasn't always a cop. I fractured a few laws when I was a child. I'm telling you, a little bit of life experience in this kind of work is invaluable. You know, you take somebody who's lived a couple of lives before they get in, and it gives them a level of understanding that I think serves them well in a lot of areas. So Natty, how did you go in right after high school?
I did.
Okay. And how did you decide? Did you walk by a recruiter and get shanghaied, or was this a family legacy thing, or how did you end up in the Marine Corps?
No, it wasn't a family legacy. It's
Not yet.
I moved out of my folks' place at a pretty young age, and I always wanted to be a Marine. So they signed on the dotted line for me when I was 17. You know, I wasn't living with them at the time, but I just went for it. You know, both feet in.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's the best way to do it. So, Jacob spent some time explaining to us about, you know, how it was several days spent with Patrick. But when Jacob, you were not there, I guess, initially, and you got thrown out of a helicopter a couple of days into it, is my understanding, and then buried under a bunch of backpacks. But were you Shadow guys there from the beginning?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Did you guys end up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we can, the floor is yours. Whoever wants to start can. Just take me through what your element and what your team, how this kind of starts for you. And, you know, we hear a lot of guys, we talk to a lot of guys that, you know, in the trucks, pushing forward, you know, boots on the ground. But you guys are a totally different beast. And so the floor is yours. What's your story?
Well, I'll start off with, you talked about the hits and stuff, the contact we received in Eastern Washir prior to that. And that's kind of what kicked it off. And like our battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Tipton, and the OPSO and all those guys said, hey, there's something going down here. So they planned another trip back there, if you will. And I believe it was called Operation Eastern Rhino or something like that.
Okay.
So, so we just wanted to Musakalay. We had different phase lines. We had a big old battle plan. As a matter of fact, our team, we built the train model, which was awesome. And like there was actually a plan, believe it or not. And then, as always happens, no plan survives contact with the enemy.
Right.
And so it just turned into, you know, adapt and, you know, improvise, and pretty much all the good guys left. So just whoever's in front of you is probably bad.
Yeah, right. That's what I heard. There was a mass exodus of people loading donkeys with every possession they have. And
yeah, it was funny because we pull in here and we see this line of black ninjas, and there's all the women with their burkas just fleeing the city. We're like, oh, that's what's up.
Right. That's I likened it to when you saw the ocean water receding. You know, in Sri Lanka right before the tsunami, that's a precursor to something bad is about to happen. So when you see all the locals loading up all their worldly possessions and getting the fuck out of Dodge, it's what we call in police work a clue. So
if I could describe the team a little bit for your listeners, and we got one guy that has been mentioned several times with you know, obvious reason, Claudio Patino. You guys could probably do an entire episode on that guy, and rightly so. But I think that the other guys on the team probably deserve a little bit of a mention too, if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we had one guy. We just obviously, I'm guessing this is not a politically correct podcast. We just called him the Jew.
Oh fuck no.
He was okay. The Jew. He was about as far away from Jewish heritage as AOC is from Mensa. But we called him the Jew just because he had you could ski down his nose.
Okay.
Like he could smell.
So he could have been Italian, but fuck that, because.
No, he could smell the future. He had a giant nose. Really, I mean, a really genuinely nice guy, a solid Christian man, a good husband, father. I think I hear he killed like 40 dudes with a rifle, like by the end of the deployment, 30, 40 guys.
So his nose didn't get away the scope.
No, but he was very proficient, real tall, goofy kind of guy, but he was really good at his job, as everyone on our team was. We had our corpsman, Balassi. I called him the monk because he had like this, he was like an Asian kind of guy, like the Subutai from Conan.
Oh, shit.
He had
shit.
That same
okay.
look to him, just like real, yeah. real zen.
Right.
And he never, I don't think his heart rate ever came above 50. He was just
Never.
Really cool and calm all the time. Solid, solid guy. Unfortunately, sometimes with corpsmen, you don't get a guy that's real leveled up on infantry experience because they're basically learning combat medicine. But with Balassi, man, that guy was like, I mean, he had real solid tactical sense. Really smart dude. Just really good, like best corpsman I could have.
Kind of the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Tactical mindset, but hands that heal.
Yeah, yeah. we had two guys like we called them the pigs at the time. They were in the sniper platoon, but they had not graduated sniper school yet. They would later go and graduate and lead their own teams. But a guy named Cox and a guy named Murphy. Cox was just, I called him the grunt because he was just this big, just quiet dude, a stoic guy. He never complained. He hardly ever talked. I never saw him laugh.
Wow.
But he was a great guy. He just stick
like a human statue.
Yeah. Yeah. But he could carry anything. And he broke his ankle falling down a mountain one time, never even made a sound.
Oh, geez.
were you guys there for that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, he just passed out. I remember
just
him.
Passed
he,
out.
Then he just looks passed out and wakes back up.
Yeah, that was it. No sound, nothing. Just. He was the only time I saw him like kind of excited was he had to go behind over a hilltop to use the bathroom one time when we started taking mortar fire and. Like it was like an air burst, so shrapnel's ran on top of us and we look up and there's Cox like sprinting out, starting to pull his pants back up.
Jeez. All I think of is the Native American guy from Predator where he doesn't ever smile, doesn't ever laugh. And then finally somebody tells him a joke and you hear him laugh and everybody's kind of shocked that he,
yeah.
Like that's what I think of when you're describing that.
Yeah. And Murphy, called him the Irishman because his name is Brian Patrick Murphy. You couldn't have been more Irish if his name was like
patio furniture,
Patty Jameson or Riverdance or something.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Craziest.
Yeah, he was
an Irish guy. No,
he had like a real baby face, and like he's kind of unassuming. He didn't think much about him, and that's what I thought. And then I challenged him to like grappling, and he broke my tooth by squeezing my head so hard.
Oh God! And, how very Game of Thrones of him.
Yeah, well, he also he took shrapnel in the face one time, like a IED or RP. I don't know what something would
be. Yeah, it was from RPG. I remember that. I thought he was dead at first.
Yeah, everyone thought he was dead because he gets doink right in the face, falls down flat, and I was like, oh no, Murphy's dead.
That was technically my fault. But we can cover that later.
No, how so? You can't tell me that him taking an RPG to the face is your fault and then blow.
I feel like we're gonna get into that story here.
Okay, all right.
Shortly.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
So this guy's like the guy on Braveheart who's like, you know, just a crazy Irish guy who fights for whoever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. He just knew the streets don't sleep, and he just. Got right back up and started fighting.
Right.
The Almighty says he can get me out of this, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
Right. Exactly. Hey, but you know what? Those are some of the best guys to have.
Yeah, real solid guys. Yeah. Across the board.
So is that cover who you wanted to mention?
Yeah, we had a couple other guys that were in Shadow 2 for a bit, and they ended up being like they went up swapping them out with Patino and Ramirez, probably I think to make Shadow 2 a little more diverse. We ended up being the Mexican team or the brown team.
We need the bean team.
The bean team. Yeah. And I thought Natty, I'm pretty sure you became a honorary Hispanic, right?
I did.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, everyone that's ever passed through Shadow 2 have been super solid guys.
All right, so you guys get there and you're told, okay, you're going to go do a thing because shit's about to pop off. Is that about right? Is what you're saying that this lieutenant colonel said that they had intel that something was about to go down and you guys get sent, or how does that work?
I mean, it was a company size operation that ended up turning into a battalion. Level, engagement.
Oh, wow.
So it started off with a weapons company obviously talked to pressure plate Patty.
Yes.
And, obviously you heard his name, Lid Cat White. And we all wanted to be with pressure plate Patty because he found fights wherever he was. We love working with that guy.
So just because he's a shit magnet or he actually is like a trouble, like he sniffs it out like truffles.
it just, he might be a little bit of both, man. I don't know. What do you guys think?
A little bit of both. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because everybody's got to know at least one shit magnet that, you know, no matter what happens, it's going to happen to him.
Pretty much, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So you guys start going out there at the outset with, you know, you said it was a company operation. So I'm assuming you guys are the tip of the spear. You guys are going, period. Like when they say, okay, we're going to mount up a part of the, you know, the company and go, you guys are included in that, you know, somewhat as an integral piece of that operation being, you know, a sniper squad.
Yeah. So pretty much, you know, the sniper's job, a scout sniper. I know there's a lot of movies about scout snipers, but what they fail to really mention is that snipers exist to support the O311s. So everything that we do is to make sure that those guys can kick in doors and, you know, get guys, you know, kill the enemy in close.
Right.
So we were out in the front just trying to get as much information as possible, and when we could, just smoke some bad dudes. And yeah, that started off really fast.
Well, yeah, that's the scout part of the scout sniper element is the actual scouting that goes in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys get out there, and your job obviously is, you know, like you said, supporting infantry. So how do you guys, like, how does that work? Do you have to deploy based on where they want to send the infantry, or are you guys kind of free floating where you go, where you're needed?
Well, that was the beauty of the way we ended up working was we didn't have like an officer over in charge of us at the time. We had two sergeants. One was a platoon commander, one was a platoon sergeant. So we were able to make our own missions. And for some reason, they trusted us crazy bastards to kind of figure out where we needed to go. And so, you know, they were able to track a lot of the movements, and, you know, we would hear about firefights, and, you know, you get guys like Natty was the point man for the entire time. So he's literally the tip of the spear, you know, just kind of sniffing things out. And then we're just looking for trouble in all the right
places. How'd you get hosed with that, Natty?
That's what he wanted.
Yes. Yeah. They needed one, so I was into it. That was my favorite gig, except when I'd get lost occasionally. But you're never really lost if you act like you know where you're going. I actually learned that from a lieutenant.
Well, that's probably because he was lost a lot.
Yeah. Experience.
Right.
Most definitely.
All right. So you guys get involved, and you said the fighting, it turned from scouting to snipering pretty quick.
Yeah, what was the first engagement? I remember something. For some reason, I've got this impression that we were trying to get on top of a roof or something. Then we started taking fire, and Natty, you got stuck on the roof. Caesar, you were shooting somebody.
No, that it all started in Musicalay as that's where Murphy took the shrapnel to the face. That's where it all started. As we were coming in through that canyon, I remember we're sitting back of that high back, just shooting the shit. And then all of a sudden, like, it's just one big hump, whatever they call them, and we're with no rooftop, and we're rolling through this canyon. You know, we're just sitting there talking, and that's where it all kicks off, right, Natty?
Yeah, so we had been in an MRAP or an MATV previously, but as the trucks were hitting IEDs, we were, you know,
got the pushed truck started
filling up, you know, so pretty soon there's a ton of guys and one armored truck. Before you know it, there's a supply truck in the back. It's a 7-ton, an armored 7-ton with no
That's
top
it
on
is.
It. Totally oh, not shit. Safe to be driving around. But it was full of water. It's full of bottled water.
And they
were like, well, this truck full of bottled water now has to carry people, you know? So it's like, get in the back, dump all the water out. So we throw all the water out, and just in the middle of the desert, just a big pile
of
bottled water. So we're like, you know, we're not going to just waste this, you know, it's pretty hot out here. Right. So we're out there in our skivvies pouring water on each other. It was.
Oh yeah, we got pictures. Was,
no, we don't. it was very Afghanistan in the middle of the desert. Everybody in their underwear pouring water on each other. So I don't think any
as
pictures
would,
of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our whole sniper team ends up in that 7-ton, you know, and we're thinking, you know, this is great. You know, I get 8 snipers in the back of a vehicle that's not fit to be driving around over explosive devices. You know, they're going to kill an entire sniper team. So, but that was our lot in life. So, we're in that truck and, there was no gun on that truck. It had just a turret up on top of the cab. But there was no, you know, fixed weapon up there or anything. And I remember as we're going through that canyon that Irv was talking about, Claudio gets up on the roof because there's walls on either side. There's walls on either side, and he gets up there so he can see over the walls, you know, so if somebody's, you know, attempting to ambush us or something, he'll see him. So he says, he leans down to me. I'm like, oh, I don't know if you should be up there, you know. He leans down to me and he's like, hey, give me your handgun. So, you know, I toss him my Beretta and he's up there in the Koki is, he's inside the cab at this point. And, so we're going along and we stop. And as we stop, we see that
donkey, remember?
I see this donkey and the camel, and it was the camel in particular that drew my interest because it had the biggest set of nuts I'd ever seen. And the way it was sitting, you know, they were just popped out the back like a couple of grapefruits or something. And you know, I'm interested in the local wildlife.
Sure.
And I see that, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy. You know, I don't know a lot about camels, but hey, guys, look at the balls on that camel.
Yeah, I don't know much about camels, but can anybody tell me, is that normal?
Yeah. So yeah, I've everybody's turned around looking at the balls on this camel when we're attacked from the other side. and we just get lit up with medium machine gun fire and RPGs, and it is just coming in, and it was loud in there, you know,
like crazy.
We're in that armored 7-ton. There's just a piece of steel between us, open top, you know. So, and then, and I forgot to mention the combat cameraman. We had a combat.
Oh shit! I remember. Oh. I forgot those guys. They were
really.
So there was a combat cameraman.
Bobby G. Didn't you have Bobby G. with you at that point?
No, it was. I prefer not to say his name, probably because the story is so funny.
All right,
I remember. But
I remember sitting on his back.
So we get lit up. The rounds are hitting the side of the 7-ton. The combat cameraman's on the side of the ambush, as am I. And up to this point, Murphy had been, you know, he'd missed out on our firefights in Washier, and you know, he was kind of. You know, we'd talked a lot back at the base, and he's like, yeah, you know, I just want a chance to be in a firefight, you know, just like everybody does. He'd kind of been left out of the previous significant
hit bad case of FOMO
incidents. Yeah. So, you know, so we get ambushed. The combat cameraman, he's screaming, he's screaming, get him, shoot him. And Irv's on the other side, and he's in Irv's way. Irv's got a saw, you know. I'm like, get out of his way. And he just doesn't know which way to go. And I'm like, lay on the ground. So he gets down between the bench, and he wasn't a slight guy. He's a little bit overweight. But he gets between the bench and the armor, and Irv just climbs on top of him, you know, like he's a pillow or something. And he's sitting on top of him, just running the saw. And Murphy, you know, I really wanted him to have an opportunity. So I grab him from the other side and I pull him to my spot. I've got this little section right here. I, you know, I took a few shots at some guys that were shooting at us that seemed to be effective, and I grabbed him, I pulled him into the spot, and I'm like, have at it, buddy, you know. And as he lifts his gun up to take his first shot, the RPG hits the side of the truck. He takes the shrapnel in the face, and he like falls into my arms, you know. And there was so much blood all over his face, and I thought he took a round right through the face, you know. It was just, all you could see was just a bloody face, you know. And I remember his eyes going blank and just looking like straight up. And I'm holding on to his head and I'm slapping him, and there's blood everywhere. And I don't know, it seemed like but yeah, I learned that at Live Tissue. You slap him in the face. So it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like forever. I'm sure it was only 5 or 6 seconds, but he snapped right out of it and came back to life. And I was like, oh, it's a miracle. He's alive. Yeah. So the other guys are still slinging rounds, you know, and it was sustained. We took some pretty sustained fire. But when I got to the root of the problem, you know, it wasn't a super big cut, but it was, you know, took a sharp piece of metal right in the cheek. It was pretty deep, and obviously with head wounds, it was bleeding.
They bleed a lot, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody else wants to take over the rest of the story, there's a lot of gold left there.
I remember that happening the first time we went in to Eastern Washir, and then later we came back, but I might be wrong. My memory has been jogged quite a bit by listening to the podcast past couple episodes.
Yeah, right. It happens. Things start to kind of fuse together. I'll still tell stories, and my partners will be like, no, that was this other time. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, just shit happens. It all melds together when, you know.
I do remember, Shadow 2 was divided into two elements, Shadow 2 Alpha, Shadow 2 Bravo. Patino kind of took that one, and then I remember looking up and I see all of the Bravo guys with cami paint, like they just got black paint on their faces, just were painted up. Like, oh, that's so cool. We're about to step out now, so we didn't have time to get Alpha set up too. And we started walking out, and yeah, snipers, we typically walk everywhere just because, I don't know, no one cares enough about us to give us a vehicle, I guess. When they do, it's an armadillo 7-ton with armor welded to the side of it.
And no top.
Yeah, no top, yeah. So we're walking around quite a bit.
What's that line? Sir, I think this is a misallocation of military resources.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so we end up just kind of walking in front of everybody, and we take contact right away again. And I remember... I don't remember how it all started off, but I remember it ended up with Cox and Irv are laying down fire with the saws. And then I look back up, and Natty, for some reason, is hopping down from a roof with rounds hitting the walls right around him, saying, fucking move! Like, because everyone's like underneath him. He's trying not to jump on anybody, but he's also trying not to get shot.
Right. I need to get down, and you're in my way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So it was. I tried asking nicely initially, but as the situation intensified, I did have to raise my voice a little bit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He literally apologized.
So how did the cameraman fare? Was it the softest bench you've ever sat on shooting a saw?
Oh my God! I just remember him. I was like, get the fuck out of my way. And he's like, I don't know where to go. And I was like, get out of my way. And finally, like Natty had said, I just shoved him to the ground, sat on top of his back. And the whole time he was squeezing my legs, saying, shoot him, kill him. And I'm just on top of him, just, you know, laying waste. And he's over there holding on to us, like crying.
Didn't you guys like say, pass me a 40 mic? And he's like, what's a 40 mic?
This guy didn't know anything. I don't know.
So you could put the word combat in quotation marks in front of the cameraman part of his name, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So he did get drug into some situations which he did not sign up for.
He's a combat cameraman. That's his job, is to photograph.
I know, but what are the chances that's really going to happen?
In Afghanistan in 2010. He's in a combat zone. This is an active war zone.
Yeah, to be fair, it's in the name of the job description.
I just remember had like 4 combat camera guys, and I remember one of them just did not want to be there, and then we had the other 2 that would do anything, because we had one of our guys, once we got to Blade Hill, that dropped his camera and picked up an AT-4 and pushed out with us when we got there that first night, and then the other guy just wanted to sit on the hill and not do anything.
Most of them were like that.
Our guy threw a grenade.
In the right direction?
Yeah, maybe the wrong time, though.
All right. So you guys make it...
Yeah, so that story continues. You know, we're providing aid to Murphy and figuring out what's going on with his head. We're slinging rounds back.
Dismounted the vehicle and ran right at the tree line.
No, but Patino before that was like, he's like, he stood up on the truck and he's like,
of course he did.
It was either him or Natty that were just like, that were like, let's go. And everyone jumped off the trucks and took off running as we were getting shot at, and ran straight at the guys. We were just laying waste to them.
Yeah, crazy, crazy fucking tactics work sometimes, man.
Well, not all of us.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of got held up a little bit.
Didn't you get hit in the leg?
Yeah. So, you drill, like, react to contact and stuff. Apparently, I didn't drill hard enough because for some reason I tried to get out on the dirty side of the vehicle, the side that's taking contact, because I was in the cab, And then we start taking rounds, and I crack open the door and start trying to shoot, and all of a sudden, I get hit in the knee, and I look down, my knee's bloody. And, 2 thoughts happen simultaneously. One is like, well, I guess that's free college for my kids. I don't know why that's the first thing that happened. But then also, okay. I guess I'll go out the other door. So I limp out the other side of the vehicle, and I look up to yell something to Patino, and he's gone. And then I like look over the back of the vehicle, and everyone's gone. And so I see the Jew. The Jew's like, I think he was the last to dismount, so I snatched him up, and I was like, help me out. So we grabbed the 50, and he helped me limp it up to the top of the hill so we could try to provide some overwatch for these crazy 6 dudes. Chase, like running into a tree line into fire. And, yeah, the Jew's pretty pissed because he missed the best part of the firefight.
He wanted to run and he had to stay back with you.
He had to stay back with me, and I'm like, one of the corpsmen's out there patching me up and stuff, and it ended up being fine later, but
so in that particular scenario, that worked out really well for us because these guys were on motorcycles. Yeah. And they had brought their gear in. They set up this ambush, and then when it was time to break contact, they went and got on to get on their motorcycles, and they had a route planned where we wouldn't see them to escape. But we'd gone down to this ditch, and here they come on the road.
Yeah. On their motorcycles. I remember them coming across and just
we got a lot of free motorcycles.
You got an accidental reverse ambush or something?
we caught them on their way out, so they were riding those they're not super fast motorcycles, but not the greatest getaway vehicle.
It's really not 3,000 feet per second.
It's a, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Haji 3000. It's like, 50cc motor. It's one step above a moped.
Like a stick of gum with wheels.
Right. So you guys get out of that and you get past the tree line, and that kind of was the first of, I guess, the whole series of dominoes starting to fall from what Jacob tried to explain, that it just got shittier and shittier with every...
It kind of got better for us because it worked out well for as far as a sniper employment goes. It was just a classic, assault. That's what it was. We were, very rarely do you have a team where there's no one in that team that you don't want. Like, that doesn't happen. I've been in several teams in various different capacities, and this is the one team where I was like, every single dude needs to be here.
Right. And
it really worked out well for us. I don't remember what happened next. The next thing I remember was being on top of Bunker Hill. And I remember something along the lines of Mahaffey. You guys talked about Mahaffey. He got shot in the back. And I remember the moment that happened because I was sitting in one of the holes with him. We ended up meeting up with him. And he's like, I think I got shot. And he like takes off his plate carrier and there's a bullet still sticking in it. He goes, huh, look at that. He thought someone had knocked him over.
He Damn. Said, I think I got hit by a rock.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, there's a hole in your camelback and you're all wet. So I think you probably got shot. So back to that particular story, when Cokie went to the top of that hill to provide overwatch for us, there's more to the story here.
Oh yeah. Okay. Let's rewind. I'm sorry.
So the 7-ton. So we have a 7-ton driver who's that's his MOS. And strangely, the combat cameraman did not get out with us to assault the tree line. He stayed inside.
Hold on, let me get out my surprised face. I'm going to find it and dust it off somewhere.
So these guys get out. They go to the top of the hill. We go to the tree line. And the truck driver decides to do this
big
U-turn. And the 7-ton just blows sky high.
Oh, combat, shit.
Combat cameraman in the back. And
I remember that.
And our packs, all of our packs, all of our gear.
It also with my Beretta up in the turret.
Yes. Oh, that's just uncalled for.
I mean, somebody still has that, you know. It's not me.
I know it's not me.
We never found it. We didn't find a lot of stuff, including Claudio's Cholula.
Oh, shit. He loved that shit. Cholula.
Glass bottle of Cholula was what he was worried about. So then the combat cameraman gets out. I remember Cokie telling me this story. I laughed so hard. He climbs out of the back of it after it's blown up. He's holding his helmet down by his side, walking around just looking straight up in the air. You guys were hollering at him, right?
I went down there to get him because he was just wandering around like pretty much an active minefield during a firefight.
Oh, God.
So we had to me and the Jew go down there, and we had to round these dudes up. It's like, hey, come on back to safety. It's up. We got cookies up here.
God, so this guy, this combat cameraman, sounds like he's a fucking liability.
Comment on that.
Oh, very much so. I didn't even know he got stuck with us. He got pulled into some of the worst shit, like a non-combat it was Marine just, to get pulled into.
We were out of trucks. We were out of vehicles. And people were getting stuffed in different vehicles. And he went from being in one of the cat trucks, and they threw him in ours. They're like, you're in here with the snipers now.
I'm gonna comment on this guy for a minute because I ran into him later after I got a little banged up and sent home. So he wrote an article about us. Like when he joined us, he was in our truck. I remember specifically sitting him down. Do not take our picture. Don't write our names down. Don't do a story on us. Nothing. We're supposed to be sneaky. No one needs to hear about us. What's he do? He does a story, and he makes up our name. He gets our last names right, but then he makes up our first names.
Oh, because that helps.
And then he said a whole bunch of stuff that we never said. Like, he's like, Sergeant Cokie specifically said that he was glad for the training that he's received, and he's grateful to the United States Marine Corps for, like, a whole bunch of just, Dan would never say that. Like, a whole bunch of, like, ridiculous stuff. Like, and I was like, hey, man, what's up with that? And he goes, hey, man, I'm sorry. They make us write that stuff. It's all propaganda. Sorry.
Wow. Well, at least he copped to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we all know the fucking media lies to us.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I would have hit him, but I was a little banged up at the time.
Damn, that sucks. So you guys make it through. You get these guys off their motorcycles, and you make it up to Bunker Hill. Is that what it sounds like?
Yeah, where Bunker Hill, that's where I think it was Cat Red No. It's Cat White. White Papa was there, just dropping air. You heard about the 3 2,000-pounders.
Oh yeah, we heard about White Papa. All about White Papa.
Yeah, White Papa, great man, just a great man.
Yeah.
I think and then one point, shout out to Bravo, Petey Patino. We're all started walking around trying to find fights, and so we do like a quick security patrol or something around the hill. And Patino is like, he's not satisfied just sitting where there's a whole bunch of dudes. He wants to be out there where there's more fighting. So he keeps going out farther and farther, and he finds a building that's just wired to blow. And I'll let one of you guys take over what happened there.
Well,
did somebody piss on it?
Oh, well, no. Before that, do you guys remember we had that where we took out that I guess he was a colonel, like a colonel or a high up in the Mujahideen. Remember up at Potato? Remember?
Oh,
no. You might want to take some of this out, because remember we were gonna go debt check him, and then Madden came and was like, no. Yeah, well, I know it's me and Patino, and but that's when Madden, remember, came and like was like, no. When we got in that crazy ambush, we got ambushed there at the Potato before that, and before all the other shit took place. That was a scary firefight. I thought we were going to get killed in that one of them.
So which one is that one?
Got lit up by our own 50 cal somewhere.
Natty, do you remember some of this? The one at Potato where we shot that guy. Remember, we had to load him into the truck as well when we were loading him, and I think we dropped him.
We were split up into two elements.
Okay. So that was just
Bravo guys.
Yeah, that was just me and Pity the Jew and was it Cox or Murphy?
Blossy.
Oh yeah, Blossy, that's right.
Yeah.
Well yeah, so we did that prior to going into that another thing.
That was like a 1,000-yard shot from what I remember you guys talking about. It was a 1,000-yard shot, and Pity just like bam, set the scope to 1,000, and then no wind and straight to a loophole.
That was when we had that has already started pushing over towards y'all when we linked up. But that was prior, because that was across the where we dropped the JDAMs. That was up there by that hill across the Wadi. So we crossed across the river, whatever the hell they want to call it. But yeah, we had pushed up there, and it was just the four of us. I remember we were walking through a marijuana field, and so we're all camoed up with it. And because I still have some pictures of us, and we were walking through, and then all of a sudden, they were having a meeting, and it was me, Patino, the Jew, and Balassi, and us four were walking into this thing, and we catch each other by surprise, and they take off running, and when they take off running, that's when we killed like three of them, and then we shoot that one of the generals, and then that's when we were about to go dead check him, and then Madden was like, stopped us. He's like, no, we need to interrogate him, and so that's when we
threw him on. So we were able to take possession of this general of the Mujahideen while he was still alive.
Yeah, he ended up surviving, okay. And they got a ton of good intel from him, and then that's. Yeah, I can't tell anymore about that, but that's where that kind of ended, and then then we go across and meet with y'all.
Well, these guys found that building that was wired to blow. So EOD came and blew it up. Like the Jew were cracking open the door and saw the wires.
Yeah,
like tons of stuff.
Yeah, they had
literally
IEDs everywhere, and the building was rigged to blow it as well. I mean, where you guys were there when they blew it. I mean, we should have never been that close to that damn thing. But yeah, because I still have pictures of that as well. And I mean, there was just IEDs everywhere. I mean, all sorts of crazy shit in that building. I remember.
So it was just one particular building that they had wired from top to bottom. Was there any tactical significance to it, or why that building?
It was an IED making building.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Okay. Yeah.
So this was their factory. And so they wired their factory up to booby trap it in case you get, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy I also God. Had, that's where we found that recon helmet as well. That recon helmet was in there, and someone's plate carrier, a plate carrier was in there as well. I think when they had killed those recon guys, or that's where they were that's stashed awesome. In that building. Yeah. So we had found that there as well.
But yeah, so you guys blow that up deliberately. You or the EOD guys come out and do a controlled demo of it. And I mean, honestly, I've seen some of those controlled demos of just an IED in a car. So I can only imagine what a whole building would have been like.
Yeah, it was like God breathing hell on everyone. I remember there was bricks falling out of the sky. We should have been, no one took cover until they blew the damn thing. And then when they blew the damn thing, there was, everyone had to run to take cover because there was like bricks falling
too
from
close,
the sky.
Too close, too close.
Yeah, it was, that was, didn't someone get knocked out? Like hit, someone got hit in the helmet with a brick and got knocked
yeah,
out.
Yeah, there was like bricks falling. Yeah, that yeah, was a
good times, good times.
Yeah, yeah, they're just like sitting there, we're like control dead in 5 seconds. And then next thing you know, bricks falling out of the sky and.
The hell's breaking loose.
Yeah, it was nuts.
So now as you get through that one, is this before or after? Because I'm sorry, I'm getting a little confused on the timeline. You guys had chased after some guys, the B squad, and you had chased after some guys. You got yourself a general, and he got interrogated, and then you guys made it. And was it a separate incident where you found the IED factory?
Or yeah, was that like 19 June, I believe, right around 18, 19 June.
Yeah, because it was the building that was behind, what was it, close to Bunker Hill.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the building behind there that we ended up blowing because it was two separate entities. It was the IED factory and then Bunker Hill.
Yes, that's correct.
That was they were connected to each other there. Yeah, because I remember the explosion, they said 30 seconds over the radio, and then it was like 5 seconds later, like they could never get the timing right.
Well, that's kind of an important detail when you're setting off detonations, I would think, but hey, you know, what do I know?
Details.
Yeah. So these, these incidents, you ask, like, are these separate incidents? What's interesting about that is, this whole mission was like kind of one big firefight. So it wasn't like you separated by, weeks or days or a month or whatever might be a typical kind of kinetic environment. It was just like, it was kind of nonstop, So everything really runs together.
Jacob had mentioned it was like asses and elbows for almost a month.
Yeah. Month straight.
Luckily, somebody wrote all the stuff down into a timeline. I'm trying to consult my notes and trying to find this. Some of our stuff isn't in here, obviously. But
well, that's okay. Yeah. We don't need that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So I think 20th, Patino again decided to do a security patrol, but what the rest of us said no is he was just like, screw this. We're not going to stick around Bunker Hill. This is where everyone's at. So he takes the B team and finds like the perfect sniper hide and then calls the rest of us, say, hey, look what I've got, guys. And so we're like, oh, so we try to sneak away over to them. And it's just, we want to talk about textbook sniper hide. Like the way the trees were going around this thing, perfect amount of shade, like concealment, cover, everything was amazing. So we link up at this building and, Patino and I think the Jew were up on the rooftop and they're checking out the area and they're facing north and they see a couple of guys with like an RPK or something. And then Natty, you get up there with them. So we do a countdown fire. And so all three guys fired at the same time and took these guys out. Natty, I think you shot one dude in the ass, right?
So what actually happened was it was... So we're doing a frame shoot, right? So the first guy, there's, two guys, we believe they both have machine guns. They're like a machine gun team. And there's this wall and they come around this wall. So we're talking amongst each other. We all have our own little loopholes. We're on top of this roof and it's covered in trees. Like Koki said, like the beautiful sniper hide. They would never know we were there. I remember they were 458 yards or 458 meters away. So we're like, this is kind of a chip shot, you know? So, you know, those guys were, they said where they were going to hold, and they were both shooting the Mark 11s. I was shooting the M4 because I was point man. And I said, you know, I'd hold like pelvic girdle. So we do countdown, and when we get to the T of 2, which we're supposed to shoot, he's facing away. And at that exact moment, I shot, and I look at these guys, and I'm like, that was amazing. That sounded like one shot. It was one shot. I was the one that shot. The wind kicked up, closed the windows. The other guys were shooting through, but mine was good, so I sent one. Hit where I was aiming. Now we got this guy who's just shot in the butt. And I remember he's running around slapping himself like he's stung by bees. And those guys, you know, their windows opened back up and they finished what I had started. And then actually his machine gun partner, we were shooting suppressed rifles. His buddy, I remember his buddy comes around the corner and looks down at him like the dots haven't quite connected in his head. You know, he looks down at the guy and he's like, you know, and then his head rises, big eyes, you know, right as he drops, you know, so it was like, it was pretty beautiful. It was like,
textbook
beautiful sniper moment, you know.
And then they started looking for us.
Everyone, it's Tom for more stories, and as this episode fades out, I just wanted to let you guys know that although we did continue talking for another hour after this, the content of that portion of the conversation I felt deserved its own episode, so you'll have to wait until our next episode to pick this back up where we left off. Until then, come home with your shield or honor.